Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Today we're chatting about cloud-enabled processing. What is it? How secure is it? And how is it transforming the payment space? Joining me today is Tom Burns and Dan Devlin of PayIQ, a division of Quizitive, as well as our own Daniel Keyes from Javelin Strategy and Research. Before we begin, can you all go around and give us a quick intro about yourself and your roles?
So I'm Dan Devlin, a longtime payments industry inhabitor. I've spent a lot of time at First Data. I was a chief architect there for a number of years, left and started a few payment processing and other related companies. And I'm now the SVP of Solutions and Strategy for PayIQ.
Thanks, Tom.
And I'm Tom Burns. I'm SVP of Marketing for PayIQ. I, too, have been in the payments industry longer than I care to remember, probably starting in the late 90s. I've been the CMO of Spectra Payments, the CMO of T-Gate Payments, and most recently, prior to PayIQ, I was the global CMO at Vesta, who's a payment security provider.
And Daniel.
I'm Daniel Keyes. I lead Javelin's Merchant Services Practice.
It's so great to have you all with us today. To start, Dan, can you walk us through what cloud-enabled processing is?
I can, and it's a good question because it's a trendy term now. A lot of people use it, but it tends to be a bit vague. From my point of view, I like to view it as the merchant who is our customer. Our customers are large merchants, small merchants, ISVs, anybody that's processing payments of any size. So cloud-enabled payment processing breaks down into two components, I think, as I see it. One is the processing of live payments from a point-of-sale system. And what's important there is that the payment processor is always available. So high availability and rapid response time, those are probably the most important aspects to processing live payments from an in-store situation. And so cloud enablement is a way to ensure that, is the best way to ensure that. So it's a cloud type topology. Your server is spread out and distributed. It's not located in one geographical location. And so it ensures if those transaction requests are spread out across that cloud, it's going to ensure the highest uptime. And if it's properly load balanced, as ours is, it'll also ensure the quickest response time. It's not just to handle inevitable component out, you know, like a server or a router on our side being down, although it does do that seamlessly and transparently. It also handles a situation where there might be an internet, since all these transactions are flying over the internet. That's the way everything is connected now, except for the three remaining dial and drop terminals somewhere out in the world. It's usually internet connected, and there might be a disruption in the internet, right? So our payment processor is fine, the POS is fine, but the intervening routes in the internet to one point are disrupted. So if you've got a cloud topology, it gives you more routes. So the likelihood that your point of sale system in some backwater corner of the internet will be able to find a route to our payment processor. So those are probably the biggest parts of the payment processing side of cloud. When people say cloud enabled processing, the other is after the transaction is processed. So it's access to data. The merchants are generating and retaining a bunch of data. Hopefully the payment processor is retaining that data and they want access to it. They want access to their transaction reports and other things that we'll get into that, the other things that are possibly available during this chat. But historically, it's been painful to get that data out, right? If you think about it in the context of a mainframe environment and you're a merchant, you know, hey, can I get a report of the transaction, the payments that I ran last month? And I need it to look like XYZ. That tended to be a custom one-off report generation project that was kicked off by traditional payment processors to get access to that data. And that there'd be the inevitable painful way to download those reports in a cloud-enabled environment. And this part would be a public cloud, like Azure. We leverage Azure a lot. Those reports are delivered through that mechanism. So that's a large, rich environment with a lot of endpoint connectivity and easy access for any merchant, really. And so that's a really good way to deliver reports. So I guess I'd say those are the two things.
Like you said, we'll talk more about data, but I think it just allows a business to be much more optimized when you have more information, and the ability to give easier access is incredibly important to help businesses run much more smoothly.
Absolutely. And like I said, having to beg, borrow, and steal to get just this little peek at amount of data, if you can get a rich stream and it's more real time, up to and including effectively real time, the more the merrier there.
Ideally, with data, you have all of it and you have it as soon as possible. And if that increases the value of the data, it's not just having it, it's having the best data available.
Absolutely. Since you walked us up to that doorway, just we retain all the purchase data in addition to the payments data. The traditional payments processors, they're taking a payment instrument and authorizing it and doing whatever else is after. And it's divorced from what's actually being purchased. That stays at the point of sale, typically falls on the floor, as they say. We retain it all. So we take it all as one unit, process it atomically, and retain it all. So all of the rich order detail down to SKU level, we retain. And so it makes that delivery through a cloud environment even more valuable.
Let's talk about data a bit more. How does it transform payment processing? Dan, what are your thoughts on that?
I like to say that payment processing, we've all been in, I had a full head of hair when I got into the payments world a long time ago. We like to say that the payment processing industry is sort of an industrial era business, right? It's pre-internet for sure. So it's the land of mainframes, and I'm going to connect and authorize your credit card, give me the number and all this sort of thing, weird IDs and stuff like that. It's industrial age handling. We are trying to move payment processing into the information age, which is totally different. So it's a rich source of real world purchase data that we're coupling with the payment processing because it happens at the same time. What are you paying for? Well, this whole cart full of items. And it's not just e-commerce that we're talking about. This is all payment processing in real world environment. So we collect that. And like I said, we retain it. There's a lot of handling that we can go into. There's a lot of concerns about privacy. There's a lot of concerns then about security of that data. And we handle all of those as well in a cloud environment. And we can bundle it up and add value to that and deliver it back to the merchant.
Tom, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think just to build upon what Dan was sharing is that at PayIQ, the fact that we have a cloud-enabled platform, what that does is that's really foundational in the sense that it's enabling us to disrupt the payments industry, the traditional payments industry way of doing things for both merchants and resellers alike. So on the reseller side, what we've seen is that if, let's face it, I'm sorry to say, but if there's a technology-resistant sector, it's got to be the land of the ISO. Right? You're still dealing with a lot of paper, Excel spreadsheets, applications. Talk about pre-internet. We actually did a recent national survey of ISOs with Wakefield, independent research firm. And what we saw was that just in terms of onboarding, which is That's an ISO's lifeblood, right? Because until that merchant sends the first transaction on the rails, they're not making dime one. And yet what we found was that for most ISOs, the average onboarding process alone takes 3 people, 11 days. And what we've done is we've taken our platform and we've developed a full suite of automated tools for resellers. So that's ISOs and ISVs alike, ISVs who wanted to offer integrated payments with their software solution. And what we can do now is we can offer same day mids, instant onboarding. You got a drop down. We've already screened all the SIC codes for fraud profiles and everything's electronic. It's all fully digital. So it really accelerates both the time to market. Or you take a look on something like chargebacks. There's an entire sub industry of people who are fighting chargebacks on behalf of merchants. It's a huge pain for them. And what we've done is we've built that right into our platform so that because we sit in the payments flow, we see a chargeback weeks before a merchant will even hear about it, because we have access to all the data that Dan described. We can package all that up on the transaction and we can send an automated letter off and, hey, Mr. Merchant, we're fighting this chargeback for you before you even saw it. Same thing on residuals. We've automated all the path. That's a huge pain point for ISOs. It often takes as much as 41 days for somebody to get their residual payment. And I think in some cases, it's north of 50. And what we've done is we've been able to automate that and split it all up. So it's basically next day payments for a lot of people. So what we're doing is we're really flattening all the operational headaches, the overhead, and the expense that payments resellers deal with just as part and parcel. On the flip side, what we've really been able to do is something that I think is completely new to the industry. And that's our payments intelligence solution. And so if you're a merchant, and when I say a merchant, I'm using that very broadly, that could be a traditional retailer, it could be a hospitality player, such as a restaurant or hotel, whatever. The challenge for them is that, let's face it, everybody listening to this has bought way too much online in the last 3 years. That said, despite that migration, 86% of all goods and services in this country are still sold through a brick and mortar outlet. And the challenge with that is that the only lens that a merchant has into the behaviors of its customers within its four walls is the loyalty program. And loyalty is expensive. It can be really great. financially, it makes a ton of sense. I think it costs 11 times more to get a new customer through the door than it does to get a repeat customer to come back. Loyalty makes a ton of sense, right? But the problem is most loyalty programs really only have, when you take all the churn out over time, only have single digit penetration. And so let's be generous here. Let's call it 10%. That means you can't see 90% of what your customers are doing or what they're buying in your four walls. What we've done is because we sit in the payment flow, we now have the ability, somebody comes in the first time, our system sees in real time whether that card has ever been presented in our system or not. If it's not, we grab it. We do a mathematically secure one-way hash, that card as an identifier in a secure locker in the cloud. And then more than that, we append to that all of the transaction data, what somebody bought. And so over time, that anonymous profile, it's anonymous, so it takes the merchant out of any PII scope. And what it does is it builds a profile. So for the very first time, merchants now have the ability to see the behaviors and the product preferences of 100% of their card-paying customers. And we've got an advanced portal that Dan has designed that allows the merchant to be able to manipulate that data, segment it, and then align it with key business goals, objectives it may have, and to be able to communicate with those customers in a personalized way, again, based on their preferences and behaviors at the point of sale in real time. So this could be a message, this could be an offer. There's a lot of ways to do that. You can drive day part. So it's a very powerful, powerful tool that merchants have never had before. And all of this is made possible by the advanced design of our platform.
Merchants have been moving away from best in breed and focusing often more and more on end-to-end platforms that are still often best, but it's not so much of a pick and choose. It's coming from one provider. And that creates really great opportunities to have more data that you can feed into different offerings and different services. And having the baseline of cloud processing and put in similar platforms can really make that more possible and make that a much more efficient process for merchants and resellers, where that information is just more available and can be deployed in more locations.
Yeah, and Dan, you know, that's a great point. And the one thing I'd add to that is, and this goes back to something that our Dan just mentioned, is the fact that we're an order processor as well as a payment processor. I really want to double click on that, because what that does, so let's talk about the elephant in the room, right? Which is the fact that everybody these days tells you they are omnichannel. You know what? They're not, because you can be omnichannel across all sorts of digital channels or mobile channels. Great, good for you. But you lose that customer when they go into a store, and 86% of everything is still sold in a brick and mortar location. That is a massive blind spot. And what we do is we are the first player out there to offer a full omni-channel. So you can see online and offline in real time and the behaviors across all those, whether even if an order comes in online for a pickup, which is increasingly common now. And so that's a big differentiator for us. And we think it really disrupts the space significantly.
Yeah, being actually omni-channel is extremely valuable. And you're certainly right that many people say they are and are not. And that can lead to a lot of frustration. So having true omnichannel capabilities is certainly differentiated.
We've spoken about cloud-enabled processing. Dan, well, how secure is it?
It's secure. It's very secure. If you go back to the way I view that world in two parts, you know, one is where you acquire that data in the first place during the sale, and then where the data is distributed to whoever wants to use it. And we brought up some uses that I hadn't mentioned initially. I was talking about returning that data through the cloud to the merchant itself, but there are third-party providers are also important partners to merchants, and cloud enablement makes that easy to connect as well. But so the security for the payment processing, that's a one-way transmission of data. And we use best practices, of course. The whole system, even though it's cloud-based, is very secure. You can't get into it any other way than through sending a payment transaction. And you've got to have all the right known credentials previously set up and such to do that. We process any payments through our direct connections to the associations, assuming these are card brand payment instruments that are provided as well as private gift cards. That data, we call it radioactive because it contains a bunch of payment instrument data that hackers would love to get their hands on. So we retain it for as short a period of time as possible. We tokenize it, as Tom mentioned, and thereby render it non-radioactive. And that's what we use. That's the data form that we use from there on out. So even though the data ultimately resides in cloud endpoints for merchants to access, it's not radioactive. Even if you laid your hands on it, you don't have much of interest, right? It's anonymized purchase data. Of course, merchants don't want that getting on the web. So That brings us to the second way that it's secure, and it's the public cloud, dual factor authentication, best in breed, continually updated and patched sort of mechanisms to have the merchant access that data through the public clouds out there. So it's secure. Long story short, it's secure.
And obviously that's incredibly important. The ways you laid out are helpful. Tokenization is a requirement in most cases at this point, and it just allows this data to be usable and safe. It's a baseline, but it sounds like what you're doing is what's necessary.
Right. And even the token itself, I mean, we use that internally as a way of rendering the data inert. We're not just handing a hash or a token back to the merchant or the third party saying, you know, okay, go ahead, do your best with this. We've wrapped that into a bunch of fully polished services that these merchants and third parties can use rather than requiring them to craft it themselves. And we have some ISO related products like the agent residual computation portion, and we do that automatically on our side. And yes, the data is tokenized internally under the covers within our system, but the end result is residuals computation. That's what the customer is looking for, the end product, if you will.
And Tom, once you have a proper tokenization and data strategy, does this affect the customer insights merchants can access?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's important to take a couple of steps back. And if you're looking at the retail and hospitality worlds in general, what's happening right now is they are caught between two seismic level shifts that are happening in real time and are completely changing the reality that we've all known. The first is the one we're closest to us, obviously, is we're all coming out of COVID. That did drive a lot of people online, but it also changed consumer behaviors in a number of ways. And now what you've seen is an explosion of what's known uniformly as the unattended space, right? And I was just in Southern California and I got off in the airport and all those little sandwich stands and stuff. Now they're basically automated kiosks. I checked into a hotel and here's an unattended thing the size of a truck from CVS for toiletries. So you've got that. You've also had the emergence of all these third-party delivery services. And what happens in both these cases is that removes the customer an extra level from the merchant. And that impacts their ability to engage and develop a relationship with that customer that's meaningful, which would create long-term loyalty over time. So in the case of even a delivery system, we've all used this to order food. The problem for a restaurant operator there is that now the delivery driver or the delivery company keeps the personal data, the order data, not the restaurant. And that's a huge problem for them. On the flip side, what's coming down the pike is that we're facing what is an absolute, it's not a bump, it's a cliff in terms of the dynamics of the population in this country. And so in 2030, there's going to be a shift in the population where we're moving away from the boomers, where we've had tons of bodies everywhere, into the millennials, which is a much smaller group. And there's going to be simply less people to work in restaurants and retail and hotels everywhere. That's a real problem. And so what a lot of merchants are doing right now is they're really struggling trying to come up with new forms of technology to be able to engage their customers in new ways. And the millennial customer is completely different. It's higher educated, it's more tech and style driven, and it's more focused on the brand experience. And as a result of this, millennials really understand the value of their personal data. They're not giving it away the way that mom and dad did. And so all of a sudden you've got merchants and they've got less people to work. They've got more technology between them and the customer experience, right? And the problem is now they're getting squeezed on data regulations, which is we all know is highly balkanized. I mean, right now in this country, you can have federal level, state level, and even city level different regulations. So it's a real morass out there. And so what we're doing is with our payments intelligence is we're unifying all that in a very safe and secure way that allows merchants to be able to create personalization at scale without requiring any change in behavior on either the part of their frontline employees or their customer. And it allows them to engage them more directly based on that customer's individual preferences and behaviors in an entirely new way.
You know, handling changes in regulations is extremely important because they're changing so rapidly and it's not going to stop as you factor in jurisdictions, you factor in just increasing concerns of big tech. There's just a million different ways that data needs to be taken care of very carefully. And that's difficult for a merchant to do because they're busy selling stuff. So having support in handling regulations is really important for being compliant and successful.
Right. And you know, Dan, just to build on that point, the other thing that's looming here is that we're moving, whether we like it or not, we're moving into the cookie-less future here. So when you've got Apple and Google owning 86% of that market and all of a sudden it's going to go away, that goes back to our earlier discussion about omnichannel. All of a sudden, the traditional way that merchants have often tracked people by cookieing them, that's going to disappear. And so I think that what we're seeing is, I've been at a number of senior executive conferences this year already, and what you're seeing is a little bit of a wild west out there, that all of a sudden, what's once very stable industries are now faced with, they're becoming major tech players because they've got to use technology to offset all of these new challenges that are emerging. So it's a real asymmetrical battle space for them.
Absolutely.
Tom, Dan, and Daniel, thank you so much for your insights and perspective. We hope to have you back on soon.